El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here on a Thursday night, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where, what do we usually say? Totally, I spaced on our...
Here, let me get it.
A news talk, yes, thank you very much, Robert. A news talk, how could I possibly forget that? It's usually something that is just automatic. A news talk and entertainment, you know why? Because I was discussing with Dan, our first guest, Stephen Bozell of Corona, California, who will be talking with us about the Daytona 500. Now, I know the race is over, but apparently the controversy around that rainout continues. Anyway, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and we're here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and we invite you to join us at philhendryshow.com, where we not only are we broadcasting the show on a number of radio stations, over 100 radio stations across the country, we also have Phil TV in HD, which is our video cast, and you can watch our show each and every night. And this evening, I want to make darn sure that that our winner, Bud, gentleman who was a Facebook fan of ours, we make an announcement again, let everybody know his name again, so that we're clear. He gets a free month of a backstage pass on our website for the month of March. His name's Greg, right?
Yeah, it's like Greg Cox or something like that. No, I'll do like Greg Jones.
Well, whatever his name, don't worry. We'll get to his name, and it'll be a... I can assure you, he will be well publicized. Anyway, Greg, whatever your name is, congratulations. And welcome to our program. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Before we go any further, I would just like to lend my voice to the many voices that spoken today about Andrew Breitbart. I didn't know Andrew well, but I had met him a couple of times. He was a very nice guy and a fan of our show. And a man who was always very forthcoming if I ever saw him at any kind of a media event. He was a really bright guy. And I can tell you, as I said to our pre-show audience, it was both Matt Drudge and Andrew Breitbart who, when I would listen to these guys talk, man, these cats, if there was one thing those guys really knew, it was how to size up the consumer, who it was that was consuming their product, which was news. They really understood the audience, if you will, the consumer, the customer, for what it was they were selling, which was news and information and a certain editorial stance. So my best wishes and sympathies, the Phil Hendry Show's best wishes and sympathies go to Andrew's family. We're very sorry to hear that he had passed on, and he was always a very good friend to our radio show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. The Daytona 500, as you know, is in the books. As a matter of fact, the champion Matt Kenseth was in San Francisco. He was sampling some of the wares at Fisherman's Wharf. NASCAR introduced the chase for the cup for the following season in San Francisco, and he was there. And the race itself, the Daytona 500 race itself, has become the subject of some controversy among some fans. And it isn't just the terrible fire that they had on the track on Monday night, but it is also the fact that it was rained out in the first place, or postponed, or if you want to call it canceled, because of rain. Steve Bozell is a construction contractor, a frequent contributor to our program from Corona, California, and he joins us on our newsmaker line to talk about this year's Daytona 500, the very first Daytona 500, Steve, that's ever been moved, canceled, or postponed from one day to the next, correct?
Yeah, Phil, that is absolutely correct. And I had done some research on that. When the actual rainout took place, I went online and looked at a number of NASCAR sites and some race fan sites, and I called that into Bill Irwin, who is a sports editor at the local Corona paper, and I said, I don't know if you know this or not, they've never had a Daytona 500 that has been rained on to the point where they had to move it. Usually they'll have a Daytona 500. They will get rain. They will stop the race, and then they will resume the race once the rain stops. But in this case, for the very first time, they moved it to another day. And not only did they move it to another day, they moved it to the nighttime. And the whole effect, I think, was, first of all, for myself and millions of race fans across the country, we had a day where we were looking forward to the, in my opinion, what's the greatest spectacle in racing, which is the Daytona 500. I had upwards of 30 friends and family in my home. My wife had gone to great lengths to present a welcoming environment for this party.
You're going to have a viewing party, huh?
Yeah, that is correct. Yes, sir. And when I found out that the race had been postponed, I sort of took a step back. I remember looking at my wife and saying, they're not going to run this race. And I had to leave, and just I went into my office just to sit down and think about what my next move was going to be.
When you say your next move, so in other words, this is profound. I'm not a complete stone racing fan. I tend to, in my life, have been more of a open wheel kind of guy.
You're like an IndyCar or Formula One.
I mean, I like NASCAR. I like it all. But I guess I'm not as much of a racing fan. I'm certainly not as much as you, sir. So when you say that the race was postponed, it was postponed from Sunday to Monday, and you're saying to me that you went into your office to contemplate your next move, that sounds like a very profound thing.
Well, I'm not trying to make it into anything that I couldn't handle. I knew I'd be able to handle it. I told my wife I'd handle it. It's embarrassing to have to tell your friends, I'm sorry, the Daytona 500 is not going to be run for the first time in history. The Daytona 500 is not going to be run on a Sunday. They're going to move it to nighttime. So I sat, I got on the phone with a couple of friends of mine, Cliff Pettigrew and some people that I work with, and then I finally did talk to Dolores Blazingame.
Now, when you consulted with your attorney, what was the grounds, what was the basis for your legal claim against the people that run the Daytona 500?
Well, the first thing I want to say, Phil, is I want to be clear. I'm not thinking necessarily I'm going to sue.
I understand that, but you're looking for some kind of a legal remedy here?
Well, what I said to Dolores and what I'm saying to you and Cliff and I talked about this is that the reason why they postponed or canceled the race and moved it to another day is because of the rain. NASCAR is never going to be taken, I'm not saying NASCAR isn't taken seriously, but NASCAR is never really going to be seen a top-line sport. It's never going to be seen as truly a sport that can compete with, for instance, football in the imagination of the fans until they have the wherewithal and the the moxie, if you will, to go ahead and run it in the rain. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I can tell you, Mr. Henry, when you see a NASCAR race postponed on account of rain, and I'm sitting there, and I know there's a lot of men like me, I've had to run it pretty high and fast in the rain myself. I'm a construction contractor. I've had to get my truck out to a job site sometimes when I know that the owner's going to be there. I didn't think they'd get there before me. And I am, and I've got to run myself out to a job site where the owner or the principal is going to be there. And it is a very rainy day. It's raining very heavily, and I've got to run it pretty hot in the rain. And I don't know if you know what that means, running it hot in the rain.
Well, I assume that means fast.
It means running it fast. It means because you got to get somewhere. And when I know I have to do that, and I know there's a lot of men and women listening to me right now, probably mostly men, who have to do the same thing. The last thing that I have sympathy for is some millionaire race car driver that can't get out there and entertain his fans.
Well, from what I was talking to Dolores about and I was talking to Bud before the show, you feel, number one, it was a terrible inconvenience to racing fans.
It was an inconvenience, but more to the point is...
So the point is about the rain.
That is correct, yes, sir.
And you feel the rain should be something they should deal with.
Absolutely. And I think that every year, if it rains... and they postpone or they slow it, whatever they do, what they're saying basically to the sports fans, and again, Phil, you've got a lot of casual tune-in to the Daytona 500 that you may not get to another race, because the Daytona 500 is probably the most well-known race in all of motorsports. Maybe the Indy 500 possibly equals it, but I think the Daytona 500 is more, popular. And... when you have casual fans tuning into that, because they're not really race fans, but it's a special day and it's a special race, and they see these men that they've been told are a pretty fearless bunch because they run these machines at upwards of 200 miles an hour, and they don't want to get out there because it's, you know, my daughter said to me, it's all sprinkly, Daddy. It sounded like a little girl would almost say, well, look, it's all sprinkly out there. They big bad men don't want to go out. And so...
Well, you mentioned something about the NFL. Now, the National Football League plays in all weather. That's football, okay?
Well, yeah, but it should be motorsports.
Isn't it? We're talking, though, now about lives.
Well, Mr. Hendry, you're talking about lives no matter what. Now, let me explain something about auto sports and auto racing. Because I've had to run it out to job sites. I'm not a race car driver, I understand that. But I've had to run it out to job sites when it's been raining. And I've had to run it high and hot if I knew that the owner... And
No, you explained to me how you running it high and hot, as you say, on a rainy day on a freeway, I don't think is the safest thing in the world, sir. In fact, that's against the law.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm telling you is, just listen to what I'm saying to you. Yes, it's a dangerous thing. Motorsports is dangerous. You take your life in your hands when you decide to become a NASCAR, race car driver. You take your life in your hands, and I expect it. Every NASCAR fan expects it. And unless you're willing to go out there and put your life on the line, I paid good money, and I had my friends over to watch it. And of course, we paid good money to see this, and I had friends over, and now they don't have the courage to do. What I have no doubt in my mind the average football player would not be afraid of doing, and that's to get out there and let's go ahead and hang it in the breeze. You know, go ahead and just let it all hang out.
Well, again, though, and I see your point. As a racing fan, you're saying that the Daytona 500 did a great disservice to its fans by postponing.
But more not just postponing, but not running in the rain. I'm tired of it. A lot of fans are tired of it. We want to see these guys start to live up to their billing. Excuse my language, is having a couple. You know, they've got a couple down there, and they're not.
Well, you're calling these men. You're saying they don't have courage if they're not going to run those cars in the rain. And I have to say to you, it seems to me like it's a fair discussion. I don't know that you're going to say they don't have guts. You may want to be able to discuss it and say, can we actually have a road race like the Daytona 500 in the rain? But to say that a man doesn't want to run in the rain like that, he doesn't have a pair, isn't that unfair?
I don't know, sir. It is not unfair because look at what I have to go through. Look what the average fan has to go through. Look what pro football go through. And look what baseball go through. Look what all go through. But the race car driver, he's not going through, I should say, what the rest of us are. And
all right, well, I tell you what, Stephen, hang on the line. We're going to get our phone number out, 877-876-PHIL, and ask our listeners to contribute here. Do you believe that the Daytona 500 has reached a point where it should be running in the rain? And Mr. Bozell is with us, Steve Bozell, a big motorsports fan. He has talked to his attorney about forcing NASCAR's hand by way of some form of legal action to run it in the rain because you've got millions of dollars, a lot of business at stake. People want to see that race. 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, and we'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Here on this Thursday night, we're talking about the Daytona 500 and the rainout that caused it to be moved to Monday. And should NASCAR start running these cars in the rain? Now, Mr. Stephen Bozell is with us, and we're going to talk with him and talk with you about whether it is time that NASCAR start considering racing in the rain. And the reason, your primary reason for this, Mr. Bozell, seems to me like that there's an inconvenience to the fan or to the consumer.
And I also don't think it's good for the sport. And I think you can have good racing. Yes, I was inconvenienced. We had planned to have people at my home. And indeed, I did have 30 guests who came in from individuals that I work with, individuals that I am in business with. And so my wife was obviously embarrassed, as I was, that we could not have people came to see the race. Number two, I found out that they canceled the race and moved it to Monday because it was raining. You've got football that plays in all kinds of weather. You have a number of sports that play in all kinds of weather. And yet NASCAR is trying to assert itself as a, you know, a sport that I guess you could say is just as tough and has just as many, you know, rough, tough people in it as football, and they won't even get out and run it in the rain.
Now, let's talk about speeds. Are you talking about speeds of the, they're getting up to 200 miles an hour, and if it's pouring rain, and I mean pouring rain, and you know, when we're talking about Florida.
Mr. Henry, I've been in Florida. I come from the South. I know how hard it rains. Let me explain a little something to you about motor racing. As I've said to you, I have had to run it high and hot in my car as I'm going to a job site.
Well, no, sir, I've heard you say that you have to run it very fast going to a job site in the morning, but that's not racing.
Hold on for a minute. I have to get to a job site where the owner of the property or the person that has hired me is going to be, and they have told me they're going to be there in 5 minutes when I thought maybe they'd be there in a half hour. So I've got to go out. I've got to risk my own life, and I've got to risk getting caught by the police to get out there and get out there fast, and sometimes it's raining. Now, well, the reason why I'm telling you this is the rain creates just another challenge that makes it interesting for the fan and makes it very interesting, I think, and also makes it very challenging for the race car, the driver. If it's raining really hard, you say, well, can they go 200 miles an hour? Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to win the greatest spectacle in racing, you go as fast as it takes.
Yeah, but you go as fast as it takes, but are you going to push it to a 200-mile-an-hour limit in rain, knowing that the chances of you losing control of that car are getting even higher with every drop of rain that's falling?
Again, Mr. Henry, I would just say to you, it's the greatest spectacle in racing, and if you got the pair, and you and I were talking about having a pair, tell you what, if you got the pair...
Well, you're talking about having guts, and you compared it to football. There's no sport. There's no play in football that I know of. There's nothing in football that I would equate to motor racing. Even
well, yes, sir. Are you telling me you can't break your neck in football?
Now, hold on for a minute. You can break your neck in football no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. That's my whole point.
Okay, but what I'm trying to tell you is the chances of a fatality in football with the weather as bad as it can be are no greater than the chances of a fatality in football with the sun shining, because it's really not the weather that is harming the players. It's the hitting on the field. It's the conditioning of the player. Don't you agree?
No, sir, I do not agree. No, sir, I do not agree. I believe that when the rain's coming down, when the snow, and when it is in a football environment, no, sir, I do not agree.
All right, let me get a phone call here before we take a break. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. I want to go to Lancaster, California, and this is Austin. Austin, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, sir. I want to ask this gentleman a question. Have you ever raced in hot motorsports? No, sir. Yes, I am. Yes, you have. No, you haven't. You said all you've done is go to a job site. I've had to get to a job site in the morning, sir. I've had to run it high and hot. And yeah, you say you run it high and hot. That's not motorsport racing, my friend. That's going to a job site.
Okay, but
hold on. I want to finish what I'm saying. That's not motorsports, my friend. That's going to a job site that got nothing to do with racing. And if you're trying to tell me that you're going to a job site in the morning, you're not going 200 miles an hour, are you? Let me tell you something, friend. You got to get to a job site because you know the owner's going to be there. And maybe you were screwing the pooch, and maybe you weren't. But you, all of a sudden, the owner says they're going to be there.
I'm not talking about you. You're talking about going to the job site to what? Because someone's going to yell at you because you got the plans wrong. I'm talking about 200 miles an hour down a backstretch and on a rainy day. Have you ever done that?
I have been, as I said to you, sir. I have had to run it high and hot. And
oh, you see, once again, you don't know.
You see, the question, Steve, is: Have you raced?
Have you ever raced?
Have I ever raced?
Yes, sir. Have you ever raced?
I have raced. If you want to talk about just the competitive skill, that
I'm asking you a question. Have you ever been in a NASCAR race? Have you ever been in a? Have you ever been on a dirt track? Have you ever been in a mini anything?
If you're talking about the basic skill it takes to race, which is the instinct.
Well, you're not even answering my question.
Have you ever been in a race, Steve?
I'm sorry.
Have you raced automobiles?
I have raced in the computer games, and here's why I say that.
Oh, that's not racing, my friend. You don't, until you race, You don't know what it's like. You don't know what they're putting themselves through. You don't know the risk that those men go through.
All right, hang on the line. Thank you very much. Hang on the line, Mr. Bozell. Thank you, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. The NASCAR, the Daytona 500, should they start running it in the rain regardless? Because there's a lot of people that are beginning to think maybe these guys aren't as tough as they say they are. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL with me is Stephen Bozell in Corona, California. You're originally from Knoxville, Tennessee, sir?
I'm sorry?
Are you originally from Knoxville?
Yes, sir. My family, we came here from Knoxville, Tennessee in the late 90s. And I live in California. I've tried to get motorsports and NASCAR racing back here. But we're never going to get NASCAR racing back in California full-time if people are looking on from California and they're taking a look at everybody down south and going, I thought these people was, you know, I thought they had some kind of, you know, I thought they was tough and everything, and they're not, and they're just not going to be interested in some kind of a sport that just doesn't have, you know, can't show a little bit of hair. And, my you know, as I said, my family was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. My wife had made... the food and everything they have, if people over.
Well, if the race being rained out was an embarrassment because you lost the party, that's one thing. But having men run at 200 miles an hour in the rain, that's the question that I have here as to whether that's safe or not. Let's go to Michelle. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Michelle here with Stephen Bozell. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just want to tell him, boy, I am really mad. I'm going to tell you why. I am a country girl, and... you got to use common sense when it comes to driving or walking or whatever you do. Now, you tell me if it is raining.
You're going to tell me you're not going to walk in the rain? People walk in the rain.
No.
Hold on.
You got a mud puddle in your backyard. Now, I got a creek behind mine that it'll rise up. Now, tell me you get in a Yugo, and you go down there and you try to be all Mr. Badass, oh, yeah, I'm Mr. Badass, and you're going to go down there and try to drive through that creek in a Yugo. Tell
me
what.
Are you trying to tell me I couldn't take a creek? Are you trying to tell me I can't take no mud creek in a Yugo? Yes, I am, ma'am. Yes, I am.
Are you going to come out?
Yes, ma'am, I am. Yes, ma'am.
How are you going to come out of it?
I'll tell you how, because if you can't take a mud creek, if you can't take a mud creek in a Yugo, if you can't take a mud creek in a Yugo, then you probably you wouldn't be able to take a baby bottle. That's the way I got it figured.
It don't matter what you're in, you can't drive through certain things. And
well, what are we? I would just want to ask a question, Michelle. Michelle, this is Phil. Let me ask a question. What is the mud creek? Is if it gets too flooded? Is you're saying you can't drive through a flood? Correct.
I'm not talking about driving.
What you in, or you can be in a four wheeler. Now, yeah, you can go through a four wheeler, but your conditions have to be right for what you're driving.
Ma'am, we're not talking about driving on a mud creek. Ma'am, we're talking about on hard asphalt. We're not talking about on mud. You got it all right. You got it all messed up.
I'm talking about conditions. The conditions have to be right for the type of vehicle that you are driving. And if you are driving on a racetrack that is not built for rain and your tires don't match the asphalt has to match the tires. That's what my point is. You can't.
But if a good NASCAR driver is able to use the spoiler and all that to make the car suck down more on the asphalt. See what I'm saying? So you can suck it.
It's making
our good NASCAR drivers look kind of sissy because a football player go out and he'll play no matter what. Okay. And now the NASCAR drivers.
They're using their common sense.
Yes, ma'am. So if you're a good ma'am, I run it high and hot when I'm going down to a job site and the man, you know, and I could be late,
and
so I got to run it, you know.
Then you're an idiot, because if I drive out of my driveway, I live in the country, and if there's ice on the road, I know there's ice under there. It might be white on top, yeah, and it looks good. But
let me ask you a question. What if your little child was drowning in a creek and you had to run high and hot on that ice no matter what? Now how you feel about it? Yeah. So you'd have to go down there fast.
Michelle's whole point
is that it's not safe, that these men could get killed.
And I'm saying if they're skilled NASCAR, race car, stock car, speed driver, they know how to drive good. But instead, they postpone, and it makes them look.
I've been driving since I was 9 years old.
But you don't run it high. Do you run it high and hot? You know you don't.
No, I don't run it high and hot when I know the conditions are not high and hot.
Exactly, and I think what we're talking about is why put people through that.
Okay, so we look like babies. We look like babies.
When you say NASCAR looks like a baby?
NASCAR looks like a baby compared to the NFL, yeah.
You drive like an idiot, then you do look like a baby because you ain't grown up in your head.
All you want to do is have NASCAR drivers sit around and suck a baby bottle on a rainy day. That's what you want to do, and you want to have photographs taken of that.
You know what happens?
And they'll be all over the country and all over the world of NASCAR, of Richard Petty sucking a baby bottle.
Yeah, we had all kinds of food here. We did the same thing.
Look at Michelle. I'm going to take a break. Thank you. I got to move to another call, but I appreciate your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. The point she's making, there's a good point, which is there is a safety issue here.
Well, there's a safety issue, Mr. Henry, when you get into the car and the race starts. There's a safety issue. There's a safety issue. If there's a safety issue, Mr. Henry, when you get up in the morning and you go to the bathroom and all you want to do is, what you want to do, and there's a safety issue there. Because you don't know what could happen. You don't know if there's someone hiding. You know, all I'm trying to say is...
Someone hiding? I don't understand that.
All I'm trying to say, sir, is the safety issue is it's a safety issue no matter what. If we don't let our drivers drive in a Daytona 500 because it's raining, then we look like the biggest...
All right, 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. And I want to find out exactly what it is you want to do with your attorney and NASCAR and what kind of legal steps you think you can take. Here is John. Go ahead, John. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, my comment is I just absolutely think that these guys should run in the rain. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the weather is going to dictate the speed of the race anyway. And if the top speed is 100 miles an hour, then it's 100 miles an hour.
Right. Now, do you follow racing? You probably don't, do you?
Well,
you don't know enough about it. But let me just tell you, you are right. You are right. And I'll tell you why you're right. Because if you don't do what the NFL already is doing.
The NFL is not running cars. The NFL is not racing cars.
No, it doesn't make any difference. But the audience or the consumer perceives that what the NFL does is tougher and rougher and more and takes more of a pair than the NASCAR. NASCAR loses credibility. And what that last lady I talked to, in fact, this guy here is so right. What's your name, man?
John.
And what do you do for a living, John?
I'm a driver. And I've
you drive?
I've watched.
Do you drive a car? When you say you're a driver, what do you do for a living, though? You drive a car for a living? Are you like a cab driver or something?
Well, I drive a truck, but listen.
You drive a truck.
I've watched Formula.
Now, how many times have you been to the Daytona 500? It's the greatest spectacle in racing. And when you go to that race and you see those guys going around the track and you think that's pretty tough, and then the rain comes down, and they decide they're not going to run. I bet you, when you're driving your truck, I bet you go out in the rain. You have to. You got to make a living, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, if I have to drive under the speed limit to get there safely, I mean, that's the whole issue. Look, I've watched
If they can go 200 miles an hour, that's what I want them to do.
Sure.
And I think you give them an excuse not to go fast if you say, well, whatever the driving condition warrants. But this gentleman's, thank you, sir, very much, because I've been talking.
Thank you.
And thank God you're from the north, too, which means you got to get a northerner to call up because they're not so immersed in the dumb I shouldn't say this, Mr. Henry, but the Northerners are not so immersed in the dumbass, you know, aspect of it.
And what is that supposed to mean? Northerners are not so immersed in the dumbass aspect of it.
Because the Southerners are very big NASCAR fans, but they let their, they let what I call dumb, the dumbassness of it, sort of intrude on their thinking.
Well, look, the last gentleman agreed with you, but he did say something that was significant. He said, whatever the weather warrants. So if it rains, let them run in the rain. Now,
well, yeah, but he mentioned Grand Prix, Formula One.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Grand Prix and Formula One races do run in the rain, but they slow it way down. I've seen Grand Prix and Formula One races, in bad weather, where they're barely moving, man. I mean, where they're really not doing any speed at all, but they just keep the race going. So, to that extent, I understand that. But of course, that's road racing. And
well, I don't know anything about that. I mean, we say road racing.
It's on a road race course. It's not on an oval course. It's on a road race course, and so it's more of a race reflective of road conditions. All right,
Sir. I just want to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I think what we're discussing here is NASCAR. And the way you said that just then, you were going more of a race reflective. You know what you said? It almost made it sound like you know more about it than I do, and that is not the case. And my attorney, Dolores Blanzingame, has told me that we have to talk to NASCAR and tell them that there are damages possibly to fans who set up, to have a gathering and the buffet table my wife made with an egg salad sandwich and so forth.
So you're going to sue NASCAR because your wife set up a buffet table with egg salad sandwiches and they didn't have a race.
I didn't say I'm going to assume there are damages to the fan because they haven't got the guts to get in a car and drive when a little tinkly rain comes down.
All right, 877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Mr. Stephen Bozell. We'll be back with more of your phone calls and this discussion of whether NASCAR should just start to suck it up and start running these races in the rain. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Bill Henry Show.
We've got Bob Bakian later on in the program. He has been in our news helicopter over Rush Limbaugh's house, where a bomb squad was called today, and we'll be talking with Bob later in the show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Steve Bozell with us, a construction contractor from Corona, California. What is the legal action you want to file against NASCAR?
Well, basically, through a Dolores Blanzingame of Riverside, California, we would like to enjoin NASCAR from delaying the Daytona 500, which is the greatest spectacle in racing, for any reason other than, a really bad reasons. And a little bit of rain, we just don't think gets it done. We just don't think that cuts it. And when you talk about it, raining bad, and football fans go out and it's almost 100 below, or however, I don't know how cold it gets, but it gets to the point where man could die from being froze up. Then I think our NASCAR drivers can, represent us a little bit better and get out and run in the rain a little bit.
So it just prevents NASCAR from stopping the race?
Yes, sir.
All right, 877-876-7445, The Phil Henry Show. NASCAR, as you know, last weekend, they postponed the Daytona 500 because of rain. It finally did go off on Monday night, and they had quite a time of it in that race. There was a major fire, and finally did get a winner, but they had a number of delays. Let's go to a phone call here. Lisa on The Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Lisa. You're on with Stephen Bozell as we talk about the Daytona 500.
Okay, I appreciate it. First-time caller. Not necessarily a NASCAR
yes, ma'am.
Fan, but the guy you have on is a blooming idiot. First of all, he talks about going to construction.
You don't know nothing about NASCAR, ready. Though.
Excuse me, I'm talking. I'm a truck driver. I drive when the weather conditions are favorable, okay? I do drive in some rain, but I'm not doing 200 miles an hour. You go onto the construction site, hot and heavy.
Yes, ma'am.
What is your vehicle cut off at, governed at, 80 miles an hour?
I'm saying the high and hot. I didn't say hot and heavy. That's a sex term. I'm saying high and hot.
I'm sorry. I'm a dumb Southerner.
Ma'am, I come from the South, too. What are you talking about?
Well,
I come from the South, too. I'm from Knoxville,
better.
Tennessee.
Well, whatever.
I just said that one man from that man come from. He sounded like he was from up north, and the reason why I said that is because maybe he can make sense because I'm talking all kinds of Southerners who are too deeply enmeshed in the whole
you
culture of NASCAR.
Southerners.
Well, I said there's a dumbass aspect to it, but
Well, you did insult people, Steve. You insulted people.
Well, my point is just this. I didn't say hot and heavy. That sounds like I'm chasing down a woman to have some kind of sex action. I said high and hot, which means...
I didn't say it. High and hot sounds just as bad. But my point is...
When's the last time you ever got it hot? Well, I better not say...
Excuse me. Have you ever been on a racetrack doing 200 miles an hour in the rain?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes, ma'am, I have. When I went high and hot down to that job site. It's not a racetrack.
Excuse me,
right.
I'm not talking about your personal life. I'm talking about a racetrack. Stop avoiding answering the question. Just answer.
Okay. If you call going down to that job site a racetrack, in my own life
it is.
It's
not a racetrack. I'm talking
in my
about
life,
a full-blown racetrack.
Let me put it this way. I've played race Sega games, that kind of thing. Now, I know that's not real. I know it's a computer game. However,
can
I just say,
that's fantasy.
You're right. It isn't real, but it does take the same. It does take the same reactions.
No,
it does take the same coordination.
You crash into a wall on a video game, you do not die. Okay.
That is exactly right. That's exactly. You're exactly right. But you still need
to play video games.
All I'm saying, ma'am, you're right. You don't die. But I'm saying it takes the same reaction time. And everything like that.
Oh, come on! You're not trying to tell me that's it's the weight of the wheel isn't the same. There's not the heat inside the automobile's compartment.
You don't have
the noise
tires for the track.
Well, have you ever been on a track, Mr. Henry?
Actually, I have.
Where?
I test drove one of these new Ford Thunderbirds out at Riverside for a sponsor.
That's right. I wish you wouldn't lie.
I'm not lying. I was out at Riverside, and I got into a Thunderbird, and we took it up to a high speed on a track. I haven't been in a race, no.
See, this lady asked that question to make me... You may be... You're trying to make me...
And when it's raining...
You ran a quarter mile?
Hold it.
When you ran in your feet, or you ran in a car?
Use your brain, common sense.
Well, ma'am,
I race
ran
on
a quarter
track. I'm not talking about
okay.
running. I'm not a teenager.
I thought you was running. You said you was running. I thought you were running down a street or something. So you ran down a quarter mile, okay. And what did you find out? You found out you can do it in the rain if you're not so scared.
Try it in the rain. Them cars have so much horsepower. If it's raining, all they're going to do is sit there and spin because they've got slicks on, okay?
Well,
set for a dry track.
I can tell you, ma'am, that if we would simply have
your
a little
video
more courage,
game doesn't work that way doesn't mean reality. You need a reality check. As far as opportunity to sue NASCAR, I think that's kind of petty. What does chicken salad cost?
Excuse me? My wife made egg salad for 25 people.
Whatever.
I'm not saying, whatever. Oh, whatever. Okay, great. Whatever. So NASCAR, those guys go and they drink their baby bottle because it's too wet outside, and my wife and I got a pack of egg salad for 30.
Baby bottle.
How am I drinking out of a baby bottle when all I'm asking for as a consumer of the NASCAR race is to see these guys get out there and grow a pair and run it in the rain?
Well, you're listening to people saying, Steve. Right. You're listening to people. Listen, Lisa, thank you very much for your call. You're listening to people telling you this is a safety issue, Steve. What do you have to say to that?
My answer to that is simply this. If you have the skill as a NASCAR driver, and you have the skill, you can run in the rain, you can run on oil, you can do it and do it and do it and do it a long time. But you got to be able to allow these guys to have the guts instead of feeding them baby milk and having them sit down and have a baby bottle.
All right, 877-876-7445, Stephen Bozell on why they should run in the rain at Daytona. Here is Ricky on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Ricky.
Hey, Phil, how you doing? Mr.
Yes, sir.
Bozell, I don't really
know. Yes, sir.
I'm from down south. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, and I grew up with you know, racing a little bit here. Your analogy about football here. How can you compare football to race car driving? Another thing is, that's like sending the space shuttle
up in
the middle of a damn tornado.
What? Okay? It's like what?
Sending the space shuttle up.
No, sir, it's not. No, sir, it's not. I'll tell you why it's not the same thing.
When you take,
we drive our car in the rain. You didn't never put a rocket up in a tornado. Nobody ever done that. Nobody puts an airplane up in a tornado.
That's what you're saying to do. Because now, give me a second here. Give me a second here, Mr. Bozell. You're out there in California, land of fruit and nuts. We're back here in the South.
I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, so ain't nothing you got to say to me that I don't know.
All right, look, gentlemen, hold on. I've got to come back to you, Ray. Hold on, Ray, and I'll be right with you, and you too, Steve. Hold on. We got to take a break. 877-876-PHIL as we talk about the Daytona 500, the rain delay, and whether it's time Daytona starts running in the rain, and whether Mr. Bozell is going to actually accomplish his mission, and that is a legal action against the NASCAR authorities to force them to run in the rain. And grow a pair. It's the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where our truth is our bitch and where we go anywhere to go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And we're very happy to be with you this evening. We have Stephen Bozell, a construction contractor, the father of two, a husband, and a NASCAR fan from Corona, California, originally from Knoxville, Tennessee, talking with us here about the rainout on Sunday, last Sunday, of the Daytona 500, which you say, Mr. Bozell, was unnecessary. It's about time NASCAR begins to show a little moxie. It's about time the drivers themselves show a little moxie, get out there and run in the rain. Football players play in any weather. And you've heard people talking to you about the safety situation.
Let me explain about the safety situation, Phil, if I could, and thank you for having me on your program.
And then we want to get back to our callers.
Yes, sir, I understand that. But I want to explain the safety situation to you, and this is something that people, and I know, and everyone listening to your program tonight knows, I think NASCAR knows, I think the drivers know, that people tune in to see a NASCAR, see the NASCAR 500, automobile races, and they want to see if a car is going to be in an accident, and they want to see if the driver can pull out of a hellacious spin or something like this. So if it's raining, I'm not saying I want to see anybody die and I want to see anyone get hurt, but you will still see if it's raining, the cars, a lot of them will go get into spins and all this. And that's part of what attracts people to the race. And I think NASCAR needs to start to understand, this is a big time. This is a big money. That lady was talking to me about running. Have I ever been on a racetrack? I told her I run it high and hot when I'm going to work in the morning. I've got to get there. And
yeah, you've said that, but that's not a racetrack, okay?
Well, nobody else is running on a racetrack. Nobody else runs in the rain on a racetrack. So how can she say, have you ever been on a racetrack? I'm talking about running in the rain on a racetrack. Well, she's never done that. Neither have I. But I've done it closer to it than she has. She's not done it closer to it than I have.
All right, 877-876-7445. Let me get over to Ray, who was hanging on through the last break. Ray, go ahead. Ricky, go ahead. You're on with Steve Bozell.
Well, Mr. Bozell, actually, I'm just another dumb Southerner, and I just want to let you know one thing. Just
that's the second time you said that. I told you I'm from the South, too, sir, so don't get such a tender ass about it.
Like I said, land of fruit and nuts. Come on back home to Knoxville.
Yeah, whatever. Let me tell you what. There are just as many fruits and nuts down south, probably more than are out here, so don't worry about
that's
it.
Okay, but we understand not to drive in the damn rain. You understand? Now, when you take...
You think so? Except you can't move your mobile home away from the Hurricane Alley.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Mr. Bo. When you take weight, speed...
My name is not Mr. Bo. My name is Mr. Bozell, okay? You want me to start calling you Dickie?
It reminds me of the last dog I had. But wait a minute now. Hold on. What I'm trying to
you
say...
You remind me of the last dumb gardener I had.
Okay, well, you know how Southerners are. But anyway, check us out.
No, just you. Not you, Southerners. Just you. Just you, son.
And you throw all that together and throw some water onto it, you're bound to have an accident, and somebody can get killed, okay? So my question is...
Well, I just got done telling you that they race in the rain. The open wheel cars race in the rain. So what makes these NASCAR guys so special?
Well, Mr. Hendry, I'm sorry that you have to have those type of people on, and you know he's right. He has a right to his opinion and everything. But like I said,
well, I mean, all you've been doing is calling me names and talking about how dumb Southerners are.
I don't teach your son to drive his bicycle or ride his skates in the rain.
Of course I don't. Of course I don't. I'm talking about race car driving. I'm talking about guys that are supposed to know what they're doing.
Well, they do know what they're doing, but they're smart too at the same time. And by the way, everybody that races these cars are not from the South. Just keep that in mind.
How come you got a problem with the South? What seems to be your problem?
I don't have
all
a problem
I said
with the
was
South, but the young lady that you had on before, you know, you were mocking the South and bad mouthing.
No,
the
I
South.
Wasn't.
We
no, I said I had a man from the North who called up, and I said it took a guy from the North to call up and set me straight because I got the dumbass quotient coming. I come from the South.
Let me ask you a question. Why
but look,
you
let me tell you something. I got no problem with the South until you called. Now I'm back to having
Why
some bad opinions about the South again.
Why'd you leave the South?
To get a job. How about that?
Job.
Make some money. Make
job.
Some money. Yeah, make some money. Make something for my family. Do something for my family.
Construction man.
I know you build houses down there, right? But I don't want to build no houses in the middle of a tornado alley. And I don't build houses in the middle of hurricanes. And you just had a city get flooded underwater. I'd rather not live there if you don't mind. I guess you'd like to, but I'd rather
well,
not.
I'll tell you what, when that next earthquake comes out your way, you have a good day.
Yeah, and when's that? When's that going to happen? Because I'm living high.
We
I'm living high and hot right
south.
Now.
We don't predict.
Yeah, I know you
here.
Don't.
Go talk to a palm reader or something.
You got something called a weather bureau out there. You ever heard of that? Next time a hurricane's coming,
veins.
You might want to control
it. From down south, we got wind vanes. We listen to those things.
Well, don't say the we thing, sir, because everybody I've talked to tonight's got more brains than you. I'm just talking about you now. If you're the only Southerner,
you know
I think we're okay.
There was a time that somebody like you and myself, we'd have to go settle things behind a barn, but it's
well,
too
that
bad
wouldn't take
that
long.
You're 2,000 miles from my
settle
house.
Things behind, settle things behind the barn? I don't go that way. I don't
well,
go that way.
Well, anyway,
do.
Mr. Phil,
and
I
bet you got yourself
you
a dog. Or maybe you got yourself a, I don't know, a boyfriend, but I don't go that way.
Okay, look, this is a ridiculous conversation that's gone on too long. You guys are supposed to be talking about NASCAR.
Well, this guy thinks I'm making fun of Southerners. I ain't making fun of Southerners. I'm making fun of him.
You know, you were making fun of Southerners, and you were talking about the dumbass quotient, too. Anyway, sir, thanks for your call, Ricky. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. And so have you calmed down here?
I've calmed down, but that guy said there was a time he'd take me behind a barn and do what? Take my pants down? And
no, he wasn't talking about that at all. He was talking about a fist fight.
Well, it didn't sound that way to me. It sounded to me like he said there was a time I could take you behind a barn, and it wouldn't be nobody would think anything of it if I took your pants down.
No, he didn't say that at all. You know, you're talking about NASCAR and the Daytona 500. You're talking about something that is it's a little sacred to some people. And you may be from the South, but you did say you're dealing with a dumbass quotient.
When that guy called from the North, I said, thank God. Thank God a man from the North called to just get some, you know, just get some sense talked into it. That's all. And
take it easy, man.
I just...
Take it easy.
I'm trying.
Are you all right?
I'm all right, but I...
All right, 877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to another phone call here. We have... who is this? I don't know who this is.
Hi, my name is Sam.
Oh, it's Sam. That's right, Sam. Go ahead, man. So for some reason, I wrote down, for line 8, I wrote down NASCAR, and I know that ain't your name.
No, no problem. I mean, I've
I'm going to name,
got,
I'm gonna name my next child NASCAR.
Go ahead, Sam.
I have the racing experience, so if you want for Mr. Bozell, I can either break down the physics of it or really any way he wants. As somebody, because he doesn't apparently want to deal with Southerners, which is fine. That's his preference.
I never said that. I never said that.
No, no, listen, I'm not going to get into an argument about it. I live
well, then don't say something that I didn't say. I didn't say that I want to deal with Southerners. I just didn't want to deal with anybody from Memphis.
That's fine.
Whatever, okay.
I've lived in Chicago, and I was born there, and I lived there for 20 years. I lived in Southern California for 10 years.
Okay, so let me ask you a question here, Sam. Here, this is what I'll ask you the question. What is to stop NASCAR, just taking Mr. Bozell's side?
Turner, I'd like to be able to speak for myself.
Hold on for a minute.
Sure.
What is to keep NASCAR from developing a tire, windshield wipers, essentially an automobile that can run at a higher speed on a wet surface?
They actually do have that, but it's only for road courses. Unfortunately,
I'm talking about on an oval track using the NASCAR body. You know, using the NASCAR.
The problem is you can't do it because the tracks are basically a bowl shape, and everything is banked. Whereas everything, when you go into the corners, the rubber and the oil, because that's where the cars are running, the oil and the rubber is laid down at the inner line of the track. And you have what's called the marbles, which is what comes off of the tires, which is worn rubber, and it runs to the outside because of centrifugal force. So what happens when it begins to rain is those marbles run down into the racing line and mix with the oil and that really slick rubber when it becomes wet. And what happens is when you're running on that line of the course, it becomes extremely slick. And there's nothing.
No, I understand. I understand, but you're not. But what I'm asking you, hold on. The question is, you got to be quiet for a minute here, or I'm going to have to hang the phone up on you. Be quiet, will you?
Okay.
For God's sake, I want to ask you something. What's to keep NASCAR? Because it's the same question. What's to keep NASCAR from developing a tire, from developing an automobile, a racing automobile that can deal with all of those factors?
Well, the problem would be is you're going to create a vehicle that's going to be 100% different from anything else they have. So, if you
100%, 100%, you just said.
If you look at the cars that run now and how many races really end up coming down to being delayed, like the Daytona 500 was this year. I mean, don't get me wrong; it was absolute catastrophe this year. It was the worst case scenario that could possibly happen.
Right.
It ended at 1 a.m.
I understand that, but you're not answering my question. But anyway, I appreciate very much your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to take a break here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Sorry, Steve, that I preempted you there, but I'm trying to get some information that... All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry show, 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And you know we're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And you get a backstage pass. You can watch our live streaming video of our show each and every night here that we are on the air. That's live streaming video of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Bob Bakian is going to be joining us a little bit later on. We have our news and information hour. Stephen Bozell on the line with us. And Steve, you took exception, I know, to me taking over the phone call there. But I needed to get some answers.
With all due respect, Mr. Henry, that last caller, I could have torn him apart.
And that last caller was a driver. He has driven competitively.
That's what he said. I mean, I could have ripped him to shreds. And you just sat there talking about, you didn't get to anything. I'm saying, if it's raining, if it's snowing, if it's sleet, if it's dry, why can't you just stay on the track and drive and not pull it over? And make us look, NASCAR fans and NASCAR drivers, like we got to sit down and be picked up by, you know, our crew and stuck in a high chair and we're going to drink a baby bottle.
I don't get the baby bottle thing. But what being safe makes you look like an infant?
Yes, being a pansy and going pansy on something that anybody knows if you have skill and you are a credit to your... You're a credit to your profession, and I was going to say credit to your race, but you can be any color and drive, but you need to be a credit to your profession. And when you are allowing them to put a baby bottle in your mouth and burp you, and you look stupid, and you're on national television, it makes you look bad.
All right, 877-876-7445, Phil Henry Show. Let me go over here to Dave. Dave, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Steve Bozell.
Yes, Mr. Bozell, the problem is...
Yes, sir.
The tires are developed by Goodyear. They've developed a rain tire. The problem with the high-bank ovals is once those cars get into the turns, they just turn sideways. There's nothing you could do to control them. They've experimented with it. They put windshield wipers on cars. They've tried this. It's a liability issue
right.
with the tires. Goodyear's the only manufacturer that will step up and accept liability for their tires. Now, if you want to watch a road course where they race in the rain, they've done that. They're able to do that.
Right.
But the race is slowed so far down that it's not even fun to watch. Same thing with the oval tracks. They've tried to run cars at speed. If you were to sit and watch a Daytona 500, that is a 2.5-mile oval track with cars running approximately pace car speed, which would be about 100 miles an hour, it would take them over 6-7 hours to run the race.
Well,
is
look, you can put a time limit on it. You can put a time limit on it, but here's the other thing. You know, I mean, if my wife and I have put, if we got together and we have, you know, she's gone to the trouble of me, I've got an, I don't know how many eggs salad sandwich, so forth. I'd rather be there with my friends watching a race where it's only 100 miles an hour than kicking everybody out and telling everybody to go straight to the devil.
A race that's 100 miles an hour, you might as well just throw the pace car in front of them because that's what they do on the pace laps. Does anybody want to sit there and watch some pace lap after
you don't have to have the pace car. You don't have to have the pace car there. You can just get the pace car off the track. And number two, nobody says a guy's got to go slow. I'd rather have my wife sit down and have people eating the egg salad that she made. And
everything with you is with this gathering of your friends.
Well, I mean, my wife and I went to great trouble.
I was at a party.
You know,
there was 20, 25 people at a party waiting for the race, and it didn't happen. We had a great time otherwise, you know?
You had a great time. You had a great time doing what? I mean, I had to kick everybody out.
Why would you kick everybody out?
Because there's no race, sir.
You spent money on alcohol and food?
Yes, sir. Of course I did. And there's no race?
Well, then have a good time. You're there with family and friends. Have a good time.
Sir, what am I going to have a good time doing if I got no race? I told them all to get the hell out of my house.
Well,
wow.
That's your fault.
What is that about? What's that about?
What do you mean, what's that about?
I think what you did is I think you invited a bunch of people that knew nothing about what was going on. And you
exactly.
Liked them so much. Hold on, Mr. Ender, what are you laughing at, sir?
Mr. Bozell, what I'm laughing. This gentleman made a very good point. He said, if you had all that food and you got the alcohol, the friends are there, why not just have the food and have the drinks and enjoy yourself?
Because there's no race, and I'm not going to sit there with a bunch of these.
Do you like people?
That's a ridiculous question, sir.
Well, then why not just sit there with your...
Here's another point about the race.
I don't understand what you guys are saying. I'm supposed to sit there on my dead ass and what? Watch it rain?
If I got to explain that to you...
You've never had a party and entertain people, then, obviously. But let me say this.
Yes, I have.
The race was supposed to start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, correct?
I believe so, yes, sir.
Okay. Now, that would have been, you're in California?
Yeah, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, so I've got people over. Yeah, we got to get up early to see things out here. Football starts at 10.
Well,
pre-game starts at 9 o'clock.
Now I understand the egg salad you were serving breakfast.
I don't know. My wife made egg salad sandwiches. Well, okay. I'll tell you right now, I'm going to get NASCAR to step up to the plate and man up and get those drivers back into their car and have them grow a pair and get out on that track and run because...
Because your wife made egg salad sandwiches, that's what you're saying. And that just is not a good enough reason to put a man back in a car and have him risk his neck.
Mr. you're talking like you understand it or something. You've never been on a racetrack.
I just got done telling you, yes, I have. I haven't raced competitively, but obviously I've done more than you have. All you've been telling me about is running it high and hot, going out and finding some...
No. I got to get down to a job site, get there before the owner.
Okay, that's what you call racing.
Listen, I was a contractor, too. And
all right, listen, sir, thank you very much, sir. I got to take a break. I appreciate your call. Our number is 877-876-PHIL.
That guy started talking, and you just hung up on him. And I could have made a point and beat him down. I've had every opportunity.
No, Mr. Bozell, you haven't had any opportunity to make any point. And you know, that point that you were making, that your wife was making egg salad sandwich and that you had people there, and once the race was called off, you had to go into your office and you had to collect your thoughts. What were you thinking about there?
I was just what this gentleman was talking about. Am I going to sit there and am I going to sit there and let people sit in my home with no, you know, do I throw them out? Do I tell them to go to hell? What do I do?
You said you went into that room and said what?
I went into what room?
When you came out of your office and you threw those people out of your house.
Yes, sir, I did.
You told them to go to the devil?
I said, why is that so unusual? I came there, I was primed for a race, there's no race. And when the ABC or when the man on TV said they're going to delay the race, and I looked at Bill Hutchinson, and Hutchinson, apparently that didn't register with him, or he just showed he didn't care at all, because even as they were saying they're delaying the race, there he is, putting one of my wife's sandwiches in his mouth, smiling, and laughing at a joke. And that's when I said, I can't take this. If you don't take your racing serious, I don't take it either. And I told him, you get the hell out of my house.
Okay.
Well, if you think I'm mentally diseased...
Yeah, I think you are. I think that there's probably a lot more to talk about with you. Unfortunately, I've run out of time. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Bob Bakian coming up from the site of Rush Limbaugh's home on the bomb threat, or the supposed bomb threat. We'll be right back. 877-876-7445. The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We've got Bob Bakian standing by, and a phone call here for Stephen Bozell. Steve, I know you have to go because you are expecting your family home at this particular hour. We have on the line Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Steve Bozell.
My wife and
my son and my daughter.
Yes, sir. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, Mr. Bozell, if you were inconvenienced and out, you know, maybe $500 for food, I don't know how you can compare that to a person's life. And to be embarrassed because an act of nature came along and messed up your plans, you're just being awfully selfish if you ask me.
Well, ma'am, now let's be clear. If you're watching the Daytona 500 and you've made egg salad sandwiches, you've made three different kinds of dip, which my wife makes a seven-layer dip and all this, and I'm not trying to impress you with my wife's cooking because I'm sure you're very good, too. But what I'm saying is, if you're watching the Daytona 500, there's a chance a man's going to lose his life on that day. Whether it's sunny, whether it's raining, it don't matter. So you see...
Yes, it does matter. I have ridden in the rain. I ride motorcycles.
Oh, God.
In the rain. I guarantee you it is a lot more dangerous in the rain than it is on my pavement.
Ooh.
So...
Ma'am, it's more dangerous in the rain... If you're a quality driver, yes, it's dangerous in the rain. I've had to make runs from.
Why would you want them to put their lives on the line even more for your entertainment? That's what I don't understand. I mean,
I'm the fan. I'm the fan. I'm the person that keeps it going. I'm the one that keeps it going. I'm the fan.
If you're a fan, then you should be the first person to say stop that race if it's gonna put their life even more on the line. I mean,
no, ma'am, you got to understand with NASCAR, I'm a fan of NASCAR racing. People have got to die, and I don't want them to, but they've got to die. For this sport, and it's been a great sport, it's lasted for so many years, but men have got to die on the track. Otherwise, the sport loses all credibility.
Well, if you're watching it just to see if someone dies, then you have a screw loose, mister.
No, ma'am.
You need to reevaluate your priorities.
Are you trying to tell me that you watch NASCAR racing and you think that what they're...
I don't watch NASCAR racing.
Well, then you don't understand. You don't understand it then.
I do watch football.
You're talking...
I do watch football. You don't compare football to NASCAR.
Yes, I can,
no
because
way
football
can.
Is
no,
way
you
more.
Cannot.
Football is
no.
tougher. They
there
play
have,
in the sport. Don't they play
been,
in the rain? Yes, they
I can
do.
Pretty much pretty, I can pretty much guarantee you that there have been more games
oh,
in NASCAR racing than there has been in a professional football game.
The point of NASCAR racing, and you should watch it, because, man, you really need to know what you're talking about. The point of NASCAR racing is to go as fast as you can, go as so fast that you are watching, you are literally walking that line between God and the devil. You are, I've talked to NASCAR drivers who get so close to that point of losing control that it's either the devil or it's God, no in between. And I'll tell you, they've told me, they've said it's almost like you leave your body and you're looking at the car driving itself. And
what are you talking about, man?
Excuse me?
What are you talking about? What is that supposed to mean?
What am I talking about?
No, not you. I'm talking to Steve. What are you talking about?
I'm telling you that I've talked to NASCAR drivers who said that they've gone so fast that they have been close to going to hell. Okay?
For your entertainment.
Ma'am, whether Steve Bozell never lived, they're still going to be going so fast, they're walking, they're ringing hell's doorbell. Whether I lived or not. Whether I live or whether I die, they're still knocking on the devil's door.
It's because it's raining. Those guys are probably want to be as safe as they can be out there. And yeah, they're taking their life.
No, they don't. No. No, they don't. What they want to do
does not mean that you have to be inconvenienced and you have to talk to your attorney to make them run in the rain. That's just ridiculous.
I got my wife out of bed on Sunday morning. I said, "You're going to make egg salad." She said, "Yes, I am." I said, "This is the biggest day of racing." I called up Dolores Blazingame as soon as they said they were postponed. I said, "Someone's going to pay. Someone's got to pay."
And someone's got to pay because they delayed the race.
Yes.
And oh, why don't you have your knees and ask God to pay then?
NASCAR racing is what a driver... NASCAR racing is what a driver gets so close to hell that he's knocking on the devil's door.
What is that supposed to mean?
It means that's how fast they're going, sir. What? No, it's not ridiculous. Look at you laughing. See, she thinks it's funny that a man dies. Now we know the truth. Now we know the truth.
Oh.
She thinks it's funny that a man dies. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've been eating my wife's
egg
salad.
No, I'm not laughing.
Yeah.
I don't
yes.
think it's funny.
Yes, you are.
I
yes, you are. You think it's funny that a man dies and burns up.
I think
God.
What is that?
It's asinine and ridiculous.
No, ma'am. What I'm saying is asinine. What, they go so fast in NASCAR that they can feel the breath of God on them.
Okay, but why do
How do you like that?
Why do they have to even go?
Yeah.
Go?
You know why you say that? Because you're jealous. Because you're jealous. Because you wish you could get that close to God. You wish you could get that close to God, and you can't. NASCAR drivers get closer to God than anybody. They get closer to God than Billy Graham ever was. How about that?
Boy, that's blasphemy.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Probably makes me a lot closer to God than you, Buster.
I don't think you care, one way or another. I think you would care if you knew that that man's about to die, but he feels the devil's breath right up his you-know-what. What about that?
Well, I still think you have a screw loose. And if these guys don't
If I've got a screw... I'm telling you, ma'am, that our...
If these guys don't want to run in the rain, and if people for safety think it's better to not run when it's pouring down rain...
Oh, we live in such a soft society. People like you have made us soft. You've made us soft. Yes, we're a soft society. Everybody's got to be safe. What's that?
I just want to say, if you think you're soft, how many guns do you have in your home?
I'm not soft. I got plenty of guns. But you want to soften us up. And you don't know that a NASCAR driver is at his happiest when he feels the devil grabbing him from behind. Well, never mind.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay, Kathy, thank you for your call.
Well, what does that mean, Mr. Henry? You're going to leave me hanging looking like I'm some kind of a freak.
Well, what do you mean the devil?
I'm saying that a NASCAR driver is never happier than when he can feel the devil grabbing his hips from behind. Okay? There, I said it. She hung up.
Of course she... Of course she hung up.
Well, you know something, Mr. Henry. Yeah, I hope the devil someday... Well, you know what? You'll never feel the devil grab you from behind. So that's,
oh, gee, I feel really bad about that.
If you knew, forget it.
Wow. That guy is, he's got a, I'm telling you, whatever the terminology is, you know.
Yeah, but like two slices of American cheese shy of a hero.
Two slices of American cheese shy of a hero. That's good enough. And what, bud?
Well, he's on the line, and he wanted to just talk to you one more second.
Well, I don't like him hanging up on me, I'll tell you that much. Did you tell him that?
Yeah.
Mr. Bozell.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hang up on you, sir. I wanted to hang up on her.
Well, that's... What do you mean you wanted to hang up on her?
I was trying to hang up on her, and I realized that I hung up on you, because she's coming through you. I thought I was talking to her directly. I'm sorry, sir. I got emotionally ahead of myself. I apologize. I just wanted to thank you for having me on your program, and the fact that that lady would not take me seriously. And
well, when you say that a NASCAR driver's fondest dream is to feel the devil grabbing him from behind, you know...
Well, no, I don't know.
That sounds about as weird as it gets, man. I don't think anybody understands that.
Well, all I know, sir, is because my wife was inconvenienced, and you may laugh if you want, that she and my daughter and... oh, God. Hold on.
What is that, man?
That's air freshener. I'm sorry. What happened was my wife has made so many egg salad sandwiches. I told her I'd eat them, and I did. I ate 15 of them, but the gas, and she is coming home with April Jr. and Steve Jr. here in about a half an hour. They were visiting her mother, and I'm just trying to get the air cleaned up in here because the gas that it... Have you ever had egg salad?
Yes, I have, and I don't need you to talk about it, okay?
I apologize.
In any event, Mr. Bozell, I appreciate you being on our program this evening. I'm sorry that we couldn't really solve the problem for you.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get the air is just fouling here, man. Man, come on!
Well, do you want me to let you go?
Yeah, I got to get this cleaned up because she's coming down the street now. I can see her headlights. Woo!
Get out of here, will you? For God's sake, bud.
I didn't know he was going to do that.
My wife made 15 egg salad sandwiches, and I'm... All right, so I think it's safe to say that, and I do appreciate everybody's phone calls this evening, because I think people hit the nail on the head. There is a great amount of technical... There are a number of things that must change from the standpoint of the actual, the structural reality of the race car. Everything from the tires to the windshield wipers themselves, everything has to change in order for them to run... At competitive speeds in heavy rain. So we're not talking about being a sissy. We're talking about the maximum efficiency of these very, very fast and very finely tuned machines that are at the very center of competitive automobile racing. And this has got nothing to do with them being scaredy cats, you know. And I can remember years ago when I was, I forget where it was, will you hang up on that guy with the freaking air freshener?
Probably everything you were saying.
Oh, is that it? All right, we'll be right back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, the Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch, the Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, man, are you putting me on?
Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. We thank Stephen Bozell for being our guest and bringing to our attention, I guess, you know, his concern about the as a spectator, as a fan, as a paying customer. But some of his conversation there, I think, probably verges on the loony, you know.
Well, I don't know what he's talking about. Having a devil grab your ass. Well, he didn't say that.
That's what he meant, though.
Yeah, that's what he meant.
I think, I don't know what he meant either, and I think he was going over the top a little bit with no one but a NASCAR driver knows what it feels like to really touch the face of God or to have the devil, you know, hold onto your hips from behind.
That's the part that I didn't get.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're supposed to get that part. I think that was Mr. Bozell betraying his mental illness there, you know.
What do you think about they get that close to God?
What are you talking about, get that close to God? I don't have any idea. I was just saying to Dan, though, I can tell you this. I mean, and you don't have to be a brain surgeon, and you don't necessarily have to follow NASCAR all that close to know there's two things. It's safer. They are making great strides to make the sport safer for the drivers, obviously, and safer for the fans, too, because in NASCAR racing, what we used to refer to affectionately as stock car racing, the incidents of fans being injured seriously by debris or God forbid, but it's happened, a car literally jumping the track and somehow finding its way into the stands. There's been enough of that happening whereby you have to consider fan safety too. So the sport is safer, but, and here's the other side of it now, I don't think the sport's ever been more dangerous in terms of the speed and the how close these guys race now, and the margin of error is ever so slight. They're running at incredibly high speeds, and they're running so close. You know, you saw that, Bud, on the race the other day.
Yeah, that one guy, all he did was his bumper hit.
That's all you have to do, and not even hit. You're running so close to these guys at over 200 miles an hour that even if your fender or your bumper just glances off that guy's car, it will cause a chain reaction the likes of which can knock out 17, 18 cars, you know?
I can't believe they don't get killed and everything.
Well, that's the safety we're talking about, because the roll cages, the actual compartment where the driver sits, it is reinforced. It detaches, tears away from, if you will, the rest of the automobile. In fact, the cars, race cars now, come apart. And that's good. That's not bad. That's good. When these cars actually make contact in such a way as to cause an accident, if it gets too serious, the car will literally come apart, and that is a good thing. The driver, therefore, is not sitting in a huge missile that is bounding down the track that is intact and is flying over the railing and going God knows where. The driver is in that roll cage, and bits and pieces of the car are tearing away. And that leaves him inside that cage, you know, if it gets that bad.
Yeah, you ever seen a car do that?
I've seen a couple of races where, yeah, all that was left was the guy sitting in the seat with the roll cage around him, yeah. And he was okay. I mean, I shouldn't say that he was okay. I think if it gets to that point, he's going to be bruised up a little bit. But he wasn't dead, and he survived, and he raced again. But it used to be they didn't come apart like that. The entire automobile was intact. And it either blew up or it kept on smashing down the raceway until the bloody thing was just a heap. And there's a driver inside of there who's been killed. Maybe that metal is wrapped around him somehow. So yeah, it's gotten safer, but it's still a pretty fast speed. You know,
how fast they go?
They get over 200 miles an hour. Some of them, you know, on a good day. And they've complained about the speeds, and they've talked about, but it isn't, I don't think it's the speed so much as it is the skill, the ability of the drivers involved, and what exactly are these guys doing? Are they, you know, you got a lot of gung-ho dudes out there. These cats, I mean, do you know that there's I don't know if you guys know this or not, and I'm taking this from from something that the noted psychiatrist Park Dietz said. You know who Park Dietz is?
Park D, yeah, it's, is that a guy?
Yes, it's a guy. I said, do you know who Park Dietz is?
I thought it was a place.
Yeah, I thought it was near Jackson Square.
Park Dietz is near Jackson Square. No, it's a guy, okay? He's a psychiatrist.
Oh.
And he said that there's a very small percentage of the human race, only about 4%, literally, now this is true, literally have no fear. They don't feel fear. Now, I don't know whether that is true throughout every single solitary experience, but they're fearless. Fearless. Now, these are people, there's not a lot of them, and there's a lot of people who conquer their fear, or I should say who ignore their fear because the thrill is so great. I'm not saying the NASCAR drivers are fearless. I think it's very, very possible that in the overall number of people that have driven competitively in NASCAR or any other kind of dangerous profession, I bet you that there's been one or two, you know, every generation maybe, who literally have no fear. It's an actual condition. Psychiatrists know it exists. Psychologists know it exists. It's not a high percentage of the human race. Most people deal with fear. People who deal effectively with fear recognize that they have it, but they push through it to do whatever it is that they have to do. Or the fear is healthy and they stay away from the thing that they're afraid of, you know?
No, I don't. What do you mean?
I mean, if you're a soldier, for instance, you push through your fear.
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't know what you mean about pushing through.
If you're a soldier, you push through your fear. Or if it's a job you got to do and you have to deal with that fear, that's what most people deal with, fear in a healthy way. They realize they have it, but they go ahead and they do what they have to do. Fear, on the other hand, sometimes means don't go there. And if you're smart and you're dealing with it healthy, in a healthy way, you say, well, I won't go there. I'm afraid of that, and I can't deal with that. I will stay away from that. That's where your fear is helping you. But this, like, 4% of the human race, they even got no fear. Now, I was listening to Dr. Dietz talking about this. He said, at their best, these people become test pilots.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're probably guys like astronauts and stuff.
Well, they become test pilots. They become soldiers. They're firefighters. There's a lot of them that get into the business of firefighting. They're cops, things like that. And the reason why I mention this, because I was talking to Jason about that book I'd read about Richard Kuklinski, who was a hitman for the mafia. And Park Dietz interviewed this guy on TV. He interviewed this guy for an interview series as he talked to Richard Kuklinski, who was a vicious killer. I mean, a vicious, vicious killer. And he said to him, he said, Richard, you have a combination of two things, and they are the worst possible things. Because this guy Kuklinski said to him, I want to know what's wrong with me. He said, you have an ability to completely shut your conscience off, and you are fearless. He said, ordinarily, we don't find those two things in the same person, but we found them in you. So that means this guy Kuklinski had no conscience, and he had no fear. And you can well imagine somebody like that is, you've just got to, you know, take a long way around somebody like that.
Yeah, where's this guy now?
Well, he died, you know.
Somebody kill him?
No, he died in prison. All right, we'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show here. Coming up, we got Bob Bakian from Florida and our News and Information Hour. It's the Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And welcome back to our program here. It's our News and Information Hour, where we try to intelligently and with as little effort as possible, with as little real work as possible, because we figure that that's what most other talk shows put into it. We try to give you our view and our assessment of what's going on. In other words, it's about as valuable as what you might hear at a coffee shop, standing around, maybe near the outpatient center of a nut house. I mean, what difference does it make, man?
No, I mean, we got better than a nut house.
I doubt it. Seriously, I don't think talk radio offers any opinion that is any more valid than what you might hear coming through the vents at a nut house. Okay.
Man, you don't have no confidence in talk radio?
Well, what do you think, man? I'm not saying that talk radio isn't good. I'm not saying it isn't entertaining. I'm not saying that it doesn't serve a purpose to kind of break up the monotony of the day. That's fine. But you aren't actually going to sit there and tell me that I couldn't stand near an air conditioning vent or some other sort of aperture leading into the main day room of a nut house, and I wouldn't hear opinions that are at least as good, if not better, than what you would hear on any other talk show? Are you trying to tell me that that's wrong?
Listen up. What about listening to Rush Limbaugh's show is better than a what? Nut wagon?
A nut wagon?
Well, whatever.
Okay, bud. Have it your way, baby. You're right. It's all good, man.
Well, don't have to patronize me.
Oh, whoa. Look at the big word there, huh?
You mean patronize, not patronizing you. That's what, that's like Mother Cabrini.
I didn't say patron saint. I said patronize.
They had better made a saint out of that guy that tried to kill all the Jews.
Oh, no, let's not get into that, okay? Let's not get into that. You're right. I mean, but Robert's referring to something we saw on TV. Some scum-sucking dog. This guy was a priest. Get a load of this. This guy was a priest. He was a priest in, I think, Croatia. And he was responsible for shipping Jews off to a concentration camp in World War II. He was a dirty, filthy bastard. And somehow this guy made it through the process to become beatified as a saint. Now, there's something wrong.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. As of the late 90s, when Pope John Paul was the second was still alive, this priest, who was on trial for war crimes after World War II, who was cozy with the fascists that ran Croatia. If you ever want to know why the Serbians and the Croatians hate each other's guts, if you ever really want to get into some of the history, I mean, to us, that whole Balkans thing is weird, right? And we look at that and we go, man, they are just like, who can figure that out? Well, there are reasons for everything in this world, folks. You know, people just don't get, people are not at each other's throats for no reason at all. People have their reasons. And we may not understand them, and we may not be very knowledgeable when it comes to those things, but the Croatians were a puppet state of the Nazis in World War II, and they had a fascist government, and they were vicious bastards. The Ustasi was what they were called. The Ustasi. Look them up. These scum murdered a million of their countrymen. A million of their countrymen. And many of them were Jews, and many of them were people that they did not consider to be a part of their their racially pure garbage can that they lived in. Now, because they were in close proximity to Serbia, they had a great many Muslim citizens. So they considered Catholicism and Islam to be the official religions of Croatia. And everybody else, you better just take a wide berth or you're going to find yourself in an oven someday. And this is how vicious the Ustasi were. Even the Nazis complained about even the German Nazis complained about their tactics. You can believe that. They said, oh, well, I mean, we know we're scumbags, but these guys, why, you got to be kidding me. So the Serbians were at war with these bastards. And a great many of the partisans, and to be fair, of course, there were Croatians that were at war with their own government. There were very good Croatian people who were in the resistance to get rid of this. But this has lingered through the years. And so in the 90s, when all of this bad blood started to pour forth after Yugoslavia went south because it was a communist a government that was holding all of this together, well, all of this bad blood suddenly did come out, and it came out in the civil war that we witnessed, and it was all of that hatred and all of those ills that started to bubble up. Now, so you don't know. You don't really know why it is people are the way they are. They just are the way they are, and either you understand it or get the hell out of the way. Now, I don't know why I got into talking about that.
I don't know, but it's pretty interesting, though.
Yeah.
Well, never mind. I know what it was. We were talking about beatifying a saint or something. How the hell did we get into that?
I'm talking about that one guy we saw on TV.
Oh, yeah, but we were talking about something entirely different. All right, now, I want to get to Bob Bakian. I know he's in his chopper, and you got to get the music ready, because I told you guys yesterday, and I promised Bob a fair shot at it now, that when he is on, he needs to hear his music.
Yeah, but the whole thing to me is mentally diseased.
I don't care if it sounds mentally diseased to you. We got to have the music before he comes. There you go. Okay. Now, with our report from Florida, here is Bob Bakian in the Phil Hendry News helicopter over the site of Rush Limbaugh's house this evening. And, Bob, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing very well, and thank you, and hello, and a good evening to everybody out on the West Coast, all across the United States this evening. It's Bob Bakian from Palm Beach, Florida, reporting here from the side of Rush Limbaugh's home, where, as you know, Phil, as you reported earlier, and as you have very clearly stated, Rush Limbaugh had, in terms of his, looking at my notes here, in terms of the security, where's the music? Where's the music? Where's the music? Where's the music? Oh, thank God.
Hold on, what happened, bud?
Ditched up because on account of the recycling and everything.
Oh, shut up, will you, please? I'm just trying to, the more you talk, the less time I've got, okay? This is Bob Bakian in Florida. Where was I, Phil?
You were talking about the bomb, the bomb scare.
Right, there was no bomb scare, Phil. That's the point I'm trying to make. There was no bomb scare, and I wish people would stop talking about that, because it turns out it was a package. They contacted the individual that had sent the package to Mr. Limbaugh, and apparently the person did not have the package of the thing, and he didn't, what I'm saying is he didn't have the package I'm trying to find, oh, please make the music start. Please make it, oh, yeah. The package,
go ahead.
The package was not a bomb. It was sent by some jackass in Pennsylvania. I've got to collect myself now. This is Bob Bakian reporting. Hold on for just a minute. Bob Bakian reporting.
Are you all right?
Hold on. Let me talk to my wife. Phil, do you have a moment? I want to get my wife on the phone just because that was very rough for me.
Well, we played the music and...
Yeah, you played the music, but you've got to get a longer bed because every time it stops... hold on for just a minute, Phil, okay?
All right, Bob Bakian on the line with us.
Let me get, right, Pasadena, California. Hold on. Where is it? Okay. Hey, honey. Yeah. Do you have extra music? Because I'm here. Oh, la, 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 la. There it is. Okay. They stopped the music. Do you have extra music? Good. When I get home? Okay, great. My wife and I are trying to conceive our fourth child. And as you know, Phil, I need the music. I must have the music. So that when I make love to my wife, I've got an iPod in, you know.
Yeah, I know. You've got headphones on. It's all very creepy, but go ahead.
All right, so here in Florida, all is well as Rush Limbaugh's home has been secured. There is no bomb. Mr. Limbaugh, of course, was out of town, but security was called out. Now, this was a plaque with some wires, Phil, attached to this. That's what they thought it was.
Now, that's what I heard, and my speculation before the show was that it was someone that he didn't know. Someone got that package onto the property somehow, and it sounds to me like it might have still be someone maybe with a little ill intent.
Well, Phil, you never can tell about these things. You never can tell. Will you please not have him do that?
But you got to keep the music going, okay?
Yeah.
What does he mean, yeah? This is my life we're talking about. Do you understand me?
Okay, Bob, it's okay.
No. Hold on. No, it's not okay. Let me talk to that guy.
Bob.
Let me talk to that guy. Where is he?
I'm right here.
What's your name, Dickman?
Yes, sir.
I know. You listen to me and listen good. This is my life. I can't do anything. I can't make a move. I can't breathe. I can't have sex with my wife. I can't say good morning to my children. Nothing. Unless I've got that music playing. Do you understand?
Yes, sir, but the bed ran it.
I don't care. You fix it or get out of my way. That's my philosophy in life. Either fix my music or get out of my way. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
This is Bob Bakian reporting from the Phil Henry News helicopter here in Palm Beach, Florida. All's well that ends well. Bob Bakian, good night. I'm Bob Bakian, Bob Bakian's wardrobe.
Now, hold on.
Don't tell me to hold on. I'm not done yet.
Sorry.
Bob Bakian's wardrobe by Claringhams. Go.
Well, that guy needs help.
Tell me about it, man. I got him on the phone and said I want to do my wardrobe.
He wants to do his wardrobe? That's what I just heard him say. Bob Bakian's wardrobe by Claringhams?
Claringhams.
No, he didn't say Clarington's. He said Clanaham or some jazz like that. I never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's a men's shop. It's a men's shop.
It's a men's shop. Bob Bakian's wardrobe by Clanaham's. Let me tell you something. Who cares what that guy's wearing? He's in a helicopter. He's reporting on something that happened that wasn't even news 2 hours ago. It's only the fact that I wanted to get him on the air and clear up what happened here last night. So we would play his music, bud.
Oh, I know. The music's going to run out.
Make it so it doesn't run out, man, so we have enough time for this guy. All right, so thanks very much, Bob, and we're very happy that all's well that does end well there at Rush Limbaugh's home in Palm Beach. It was a suspicious package. It was not a bomb. It found its way onto Mr. Limbaugh's property and was discovered by his security people, and they thought it looked unusual enough that they needed to call the authorities. Now, it had attached to it wires. It had some kind of a metal plate, so they were concerned about it. They contacted the individual that sent it, and the individual said to them, he assured them it was not a bomb. I'm just guessing, and we'll get the news as it comes out, that this was a fan or otherwise someone who was not acquainted with Mr. Limbaugh but sent him something, and it found its way to his address, his home address, as opposed to, let's say, the clearinghouse that deals with his mail. And it was thusly dealt with by his security. Eight alleged Penn State victims say abused on campus. That's where they say it happened. We got more of this Sandusky stuff.
Oh, I mean, want to get the music ready?
What music?
For Bob Bakian.
We're not having Bakian back with that. He's done. We'll be back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour. Now, Andrew Breitbart has passed on. He died overnight. He was 43 years of age. Andrew Breitbart was a young man, a mover and shaker, as they say in the new media, along with Matt Drudge. I would say that more so Matt than Andrew, because Andrew worked for him and sort of learned at the master's feet. But the two of them were the prime movers, the prime motivators of the new media, the new anarchy of journalism on the internet, which I've always been a fan of, because I think you have to be responsible for your own information. I'm so grateful. If there's one thing I'm grateful for when it comes to the internet, it's that there's just too much information out there now for anybody to be stupid. There's too much information out there now for anybody to use the old saw that they used to use back when I was a kid. The media's this media's biased bullcrap, forget it. It may be biased, but if all you're hearing is the biased media, then you are not accessing enough of it, and there is an unlimited supply of it. Now, yeah, you have to be careful if you're reading some jackass's blog, some guy that ought to be on medication. And he's writing his Fantasyland blog, and people are flocking around that like it's the truth, like it's Moses from the Mount. Well, you know, in other words, there's no excuse. There are no excuses left. There are no excuses left for being an idiot. And if people take information and they purposefully ignore other information so that their worldview can be perpetuated. In other words, if we approached news the way scientists approach science and the facts of the natural facts of life, we'd be far better off. We would be approaching information the same way a scientist may approach the truth about a virus or a certain cycle of life or whatever it was that they're studying. And whatever they find, they find. A real scientist doesn't say, I really, 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 really want to believe that this is this and that is that. And so I'm going to conduct my experiments so that it all comes out the way I want it to be. Now, that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? It sounds criminal almost. No real scientist would ever do that. And yet people go after information, they go after news, they go after truth exactly that way. That's the way so many people these days take information. They really, 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 really want to believe that this, and this is true. And so they're only going to... I don't have any real patience with anyone that sends me a blog. Read this, Phil, and it comes from freaking Alex Jones's website. Well, what are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, man, that's the guy. You're just so right. Thank you for sending me that, because I just know Mr. Jones is so objective. Anyway, Andrew Breitbart, excuse me, along with Matt Drudge, and along with many others, helped open those portals He was remembered yesterday for his strong conservative views, which he developed as a young, traditionally liberal living on the West Side. His mother-in-law, Allison Mills Bean, called Breitbart one of the most genuine people I've ever met in my life. No matter whether people agreed or disagreed with him, he never wavered. He was born in 1969, February the 1st. He grew up in Brentwood with secular Jewish parents who adopted him and sent him to exclusive schools. His father, Gerald, owned a landmark Santa Monica restaurant. He attended Tulane University, became a passionate consumer of what he called girly drinks. Whatever that is, man. He said, I would say I was a shallow nihilist. As a young adult, he had three epiphanies that turned him from a rollerblading, gallivanting, jocular liberal into the conservative thinker that he became. He was appalled in the late 1980s when his childhood best friend and business partner, Larry Solo, told him that he was not allowed into a dormitory. He had to live in a segregated black dormitory. He was furious at the 1991 grilling of Clarence Thomas during his Supreme Court nomination hearings. And then, of course, Breitbart, part of Kurt Cobain's generation, and Breitbart became very upset when people anointed Kurt Cobain as the spokesman of that generation. So these, a very good friend is told that he has to live in a segregated black dormitory. He finds out about Clarence Thomas being grilled the way he was in the 1991 hearings, and Kurt Cobain anointed the spokesman of his generation. He didn't like that either, so he became a conservative. Now, I mentioned this during the pre-show. I only met Andrew Breitbart a couple of times. I'm very proud to say that he was a fan of our show, and I remember him talking to me about, we were just talking shop, and he was talking about a particular talk show that had just gone on the air. And this was, we were talking in Marina Del Rey. We were at an Al Peterson media seminar at the Marriott, and it was a Saturday morning. And Andrew said to me that his opinion of this particular talk show, this conservative talk show, and he was a conservative. So I'm just giving you an example of how really objective he was. As a conservative, you'd think he'd be supportive of a conservative, another conservative talk show. But he said to me, he said, that show isn't going to go, man. It's a Hollywood guy trying to talk to fly over America. It ain't going to happen. It's going to suck. And he was right. It did. And it went off the air in a year. And that's what impressed me the most about him and Matt Drudge. They knew their customer, man. They knew the customer. They were so smart at sizing up Americans and how Americans think and what Americans find acceptable and what Americans don't find acceptable and what we like and what we don't like and how long we'll stay with one trend and how we'll, and how quickly we'll give up with another one. He was just a smart, smart guy. And like I say, along with Drudge, they mined that. That knowledge they used to mine the American mind. So our sympathies here from the Phil Henry Show go to the Andrew Breitbart family, and we'll really miss that guy, man. I'll just miss having him say how much he likes the show,
Yeah, except you only heard him say it one time.
I only talked to him one time. All right, we'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. I'm just fooling around with something here, guys. Just give me a second, because I screwed up my printer, man.
Told you, go to executive size.
I did that, and it screwed it up. Okay?
Not supposed to go there. Well, you said it was cutting it off.
But I got it, man. What happened was my printer is printing stuff, and it's the size is cutting off some of the print. So I made the mistake of going with my friend Bud Dickman's recommendation.
Not my fault. He said it.
No, I didn't, man. You did. Hold.
Just wait a minute. So I went over to executive size. That's not printing, so I've gone back now to letter size, which is what it was, and it's not reverting. While I've reverted it here on the printer, I've reverted it here on the desktop. It is not changing back on my printer. So, Bud, I hold you responsible. I want you to fix it.
Why do I got to fix it?
Because you're the guy that said to do it.
You're the guy that said for me to do it, man. You're the guy that said, oh, go to executive size, go to executive size. That's why it's cutting it off.
Yeah, but I didn't know. He didn't have no idea neither.
He didn't have no idea neither. All I'm telling you is, see down there, it's red, and it says it's not printing because of that. Your fault, not mine. It's on you. Thank you. All right. It can't be that tough, bud. All you got to do is just go over to the print feature and change it or something. I don't know.
I don't know what to do. All it says is I put it back to normal.
You didn't. That's supposed to put it back to normal. You put it back to properties, letter size, normal, plain paper, auto select. Same as first page. Default. Should we go back? Should you go to default? I don't know. But the printer's screwed up, so I want you to fix it, because you done did it. All right, welcome back, folks. Sorry to have to involve you in all of that. Sandusky federal probe may have different focus. Get a load of this. Sandusky thing is really a mess. It is. And it's such a lesson in life. It's a lesson that anything is possible. Anything can happen. There are no storybook. And, you know, a lot of people believe that they believe in this idea that, that life is destiny, that somehow there is predestination. And I think that I think we fool ourselves, you know, sometimes into believing that there is just a certain way that things will go. And in the case of a Joe Paterno and a Penn State and all of the greater glory that is college football in America and the great American story. One would think that, like so many other head coaches before him, like the Newt Rockneys, like the Walter Camps, like the Pop Warners, like the men that have that are still with us, the John McKays, like the guys that are no longer with us, like the aforementioned Woody Hayes, that he would go down in history. And all we would think about when it came to Joe Paterno was football and the greatness of the Penn State program. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue comes an O.J. Simpson story. Now, it's not the O.J. story as in the severe culpability of a murderer. I'm not talking about that. But think of how radical the O.J. Simpson saga, how radical a shift that was from where we thought it was going, where we thought the O.J. Simpson story was going, where we thought we would wind up with the O.J. Simpson story, the funny movies that he was doing, jumping through, hoops there with the, what was it?
Well, he wasn't jumping through hoops, he was in the airport.
Yeah, I know, but it's the same thing.
Hold on, bud, I got it. I know what you're saying, Robert. I mean, he was leaping over, trying to think of what the hell he was leaping over.
Like chairs.
Yeah, he's leaping over chairs and stuff. So it was the O.J. Simpson who was jumping over chairs in the airport. And he's in that police squad movie, and he's doing football, and he is every bit the great American hero that we wanted him to be, that we enjoyed seeing, that we loved to reminisce about when it came to his football playing, O.J. Simpson. And the same thing with Paterno, Joe Pa, and the great Penn State teams, and the blue and the white. And the excellence with honor and all of that jazz that he preached. Well, guess what? These stories took a big fat turn, man. They took a big fat left turn or a right turn, depending upon how you want to look at turns. And now we're someplace else, man. Someplace really dark and really sick. It isn't Joe Paterno's fault, but he has been sucked down like people who've jumped off a ship and can't swim fast enough to get away from the thing. Eventually going to the bottom of the sea, like the Titanic or any other giant ship. It just sucks everything with it right to the bottom. And Joe Paterno is like one of those people trying to swim frantically from this sinking ship, and he never did make it clear. 8 of the 10 men who prosecutors contend were sexually abused by former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky were abused on the college campus, and one was just 8 years old at the time, according to court documents released today. And that would be, when I say today, I mean Thursday. The documents released by prosecutors said 6 may also have been abused at the home of Sandusky. who faces 52 counts of abuse stemming from accusations he molested the 10 boys between 1994 and 2008. Now, mind you, this is what the prosecution is contending. This does not mean that this is what happened, but this is what the prosecution is contending, that there were 8 of 10 men sexually abused, 8 of 10 boys sexually abused on the campus, and there was one who was abused at Sandusky's home. If it's true, it's about as low as it gets. Well, it is. It's lower than it gets. It's lower than anything. The documents released by prosecutors said 6 may also have been abused at the home of Sandusky. 6 now, okay, who faces 52 counts of abuse stemming from accusations he molested the 10 boys between 94 and 2008. Sandusky's November indictment rocked the U.S. college sports world and led to the dismissal of Penn State's longtime head football coach Joe Paterno. Sandusky, who's maintained his innocence, has been confined to his home since December. The court documents said 8 victims were sexually abused by Sandusky on a Penn State campus at State College. The accusers or witnesses said the abuse occurred in the campus football building, in dormitories, in locker rooms, in showers, and in an outdoor pool. They also report abuse in Sandusky's car and at a local hotel, as well as in Texas and in Florida. Now, you know, there have been some pretty wild accusations in the past concerning child molestation that have not been true. The most glaring of these was the McMartin case in California in the 80s. But those were children, very, very small children, and who were found to have been unfairly manipulated by court psychologists, prosecutors, parents, and at least in one instance, media. And it took some pretty hard thinking and at least a couple of sober moments on the part of people who, thank God, understood what was happening to analyze this and to come up with the truth, which was these kids were making things up. Those are little kids, though. These are adults. And adults can make things up, no question about it. Adults can make things up. But adults are fully aware of the consequences of lying. Adults are fully aware of the intelligence of the individuals that they are telling their stories to and the ability of those individuals to rip the living hell out of any lie that they tell. They're very well aware of the fact that if they are caught lying, they can go to jail. So, you know, you apply an adult sensibility to this and you start to recognize that, you know.
But that means, still don't mean to tell the truth.
No, you're right. It still doesn't mean to tell the truth. What I'm saying is they know the consequences of their lies.
There are a lot of people, man, the same people saying the same thing.
What?
They're saying the same thing. A lot of people agreeing.
Well, I mean, that doesn't matter because there were a lot of, at the McMartin thing, there were a lot of little kids that they were talking to who were saying outrageous things like, you know, they were digging 6-foot-deep trenches and there were satanic rituals going on in the middle of the night. That whole Satanism thing, oh, my God. Never in the history of that was a reoccurrence of the Salem witch hysteria, if ever there was one.
What was?
That whole devil thing that was going on in the 80s in this country. That whole, that's exactly what that whole Memphis, West Memphis 3 thing was about. Those three young men got caught up in a devil worship, satanic worship hysteria in that town that had taken hold of this whole country during the 80s, that suddenly we thought every young kid was worshiping the devil, and every teenage kid was into some satanic cult, and every teenage kid was being initiated into a vampire cults, and we lost our minds, man. And in the case of the West Memphis Three, they stuck them in jail for 18 years. Why? For no other reason than a town of people got hysterical over Satanism. There wasn't any evidence whatsoever of any Satanism. And even the state of Arkansas, and I, you know, you can say what you want, but even the state of Arkansas, they're not even man enough, not one of them there has the guts to come out and say what they should have said, which was, we absolutely butchered this, man. We butchered it. That dumbass that I saw, when they let those three guys out, whoever that guy was that runs the state of Arkansas, the state attorney, well, I believe they're guilty. Well, if you believe they're guilty, what are you letting them out of jail for, man?
Yeah, but everybody wants them out.
No, hold on for a minute. If the number one law enforcement guy in the state of Arkansas says, I believe they're guilty still, why is that guy letting them out of jail?
Yeah, well, he don't have no evidence.
Well, if he hasn't got any evidence, what the hell's he running his mouth for? I mean, that was the most unbelievable statement I ever heard in my life. This guy's the attorney general for Arkansas. He says, well, I believe that they're guilty. I always am. Oh, you know what? After a while, man, you just sound like you're full of hot air. Because if you dumbasses in that state had evidence of guilt and you believe they're guilty, huh? Well, then you must. You're a cop. You're the head of law enforcement in that state. You ought to know what you're talking about. If you've got evidence that tells you those guys are guilty, then their asses should still be in prison, you dumbass. Not cutting deals to let them out. And to save your face and to save the state of Arkansas money, they made them plead guilty. Well, they didn't have to take the plea, Phil. No, you're right. They didn't have to take the plea. They could have stayed in prison. And as one of them said, if I'd done that, my friend would still be on death row and they could kill him. They would kill him. He'd still be in prison and they could pull a switch on him or whatever they do in Arkansas and he would be dead. That's why I went ahead and said, okay. Otherwise, that kid didn't want to do that. He did not want to plead guilty. He was going to stay in jail. Well, the same thing holds for this hysteria surrounding McMartin. It was a Satanism thing. Until finally, you know, there were people who were indicted unfairly, and they lost their business, they lost their reputation, they lost everything. So, yeah, people lie. In this instance, though, you've got adults who know the consequences of their lies. They understand the challenge ahead if they lie. They understand the possibility that their lie will be found out. There's too much going on here, man. There's far too much at stake here for these people to stand there and lie about Jerry Sandusky, which I'm not saying they're not. They could be, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think they are, because how many people, you know, you'd have to get your story straight and everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's just there are a lot of people. And we also have the incident, of that mother who let the cops either eavesdrop or wiretap the conversation she had with Sandusky, asking him to apologize for his behavior with her son. And in point of fact, he did. You know, it was out of hand, and I shouldn't have done this, and I shouldn't have done that. So this guy, Sandusky's been in, he's had contact with the police before. And, you know, it ain't been good. Despite the new information, Sandusky's defense attorney told Reuters he'd been hoping for more information on the accusers and the nature of the allegations in the so-called bill of particulars. We may file a motion in the near future for more specific response. We don't believe any of the information in the Commonwealth's response will alter our defense. We're continuing with the preparation of Jerry's defense with the goal of obtaining an acquittal on all charges filed against him. State Attorney General Linda Kelly said in a court paper her office still had not identified so-called Victim 2 and Victim 8. The boys' ages when the alleged abuse began ranged from 8 to 13. She hadn't identified? How the hell do you know that you've got victims if you can't identify them?
What do you mean?
If you've got two victims, okay, her office still had not identified so-called... If you've got two victims and you know that these people exist, you know this happened... Why is it you don't know who they are?
Well, maybe somebody saw, but they don't know who.
You mean it was just on the word of witnesses?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back here on the Phil Henry Show with our final segment here on our News and Information Hour on this Thursday night, now Friday morning. And guess what, man? I got my weekends. No more 6 days. I can't believe it. You know, that's going to be worth a lot of money just to be able to sleep in on Saturday. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. What do you think I'm looking for, bud?
Not even the name of that guy to want a BSP.
Exactly. I forgot to bring the iPhone down here. It's the only place where I have that guy's information stored, but we do have a winner of our... Look, no service, naturally. But the point being, we do have a winner of our free BSP for the month, and by God, we're going... I announced his name the other night, so we're good. His name's Greg, but I got his last name. It's been a really squirrely first part of the month. Let me just put it that way. Anyway, congratulations. We've given away a free BSP. And if you'd like to win a free month, a free subscription for a solid month to the Phil Henry Show website, all you have to do is do one of two things. You go to our Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS, and like the page. And once you like that page, you are in the running to be possibly to win that free BSP. Or you can go to Twitter and go to twitter.com/PhilHenryShow. That's Phil Henry Show. And you hashtag the name Phil Henry. Hashtag Phil Henry. Either way, you're in the drawing for that month's free BSP. The next one that we've got coming up for the month of April. And you know what's cool about giving away these free BSPs, man? I can look forward to the next month and the next month. And then the next thing you know, it's summertime. Hey.
I don't want the summer to get here too fast. I want to enjoy, like, just spit it out, man. Just anticipating it.
Okay, good. That's a very good way of looking at it, bud. Good boy. All right, what else? So I did the Sandusky thing. Yeah, and that's sick and twisted, man. I don't want to talk any more about that to you. The only other thing that I had left was it was a really good month for buying cars, I guess. U.S. automakers reported, especially the fuel-efficient cars. The fuel-efficient cars are doing better in terms of sales. And so that is a plus. Detroit apparently has had a good period of sales, and that in turn has helped the stock market. Right now, they're looking at a stock market that could bust through the 14,000 point mark, certainly by the end of the month, if not sooner. And they're now anticipating that maybe it's going to begin to set all kinds of new records. Now, what does all of this stuff mean? It doesn't mean anything really, because it's a and I'm not trying to bum anybody out, but the fact is, as we've always said, the stock market. Watching it is like watching the crowd at a baseball game. You're not watching the game. You're watching the crowd. But it's something that these guys that are trying to get Obama out of the White House, they're going to have to deal with it sooner or later, the economy improving slightly. And there are people that are going to say, now I'm hearing the following. We can do better. Now, that's not exactly what I call a rallying cry. That's not Braveheart on the mountain. You know what I mean? That ain't some guy who's painted his face, pulling up his kilt, showing everybody what he's got and saying, hey, hey, ho, let's get on there, man, and burn York. Yeah, woo! That's, we can do better. You know, you don't exactly see the, you don't see him swinging their swords in the air on that one.
That kind of baby, man, that ain't going to get nobody going.
You better believe it's not going to get any, we can do better. See, you know, this has been, I'm telling you, I don't think I've lived through a more fascinating period in American politics. I've heard more people who think they just got it all figured out, man. When Obama became president and the economy was in absolute ruins, and it wasn't his fault any more than it was President Bush's fault, if you want to get right down to it, you had a lot of behind the scenes, you had a lot of in front of the scenes, all kinds of people making all kinds of moves with the Fannie Mae and the manipulation of these mortgages in favor of the low-income people, getting everybody the American dream, trying to force-feed the idea that the American dream is possible for everyone, and let's get it yesterday. I mean, all of these things conspired to wreck the economy. And now what do we got? Now we got an economy that may be recovering, and a bunch of Republicans that still can't agree on the color of the sky. So it's going to be real interesting. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. Don't forget that we are online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And, of course, that's where you can find our live streaming video as well as our archives. We do appreciate you guys being with us each and every night. Join us again tonight at 10 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, 1 a.m. on the West Coast. 10 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast.
Where's the West Coast?
That's Pacific. For the Phil Henry Show. And until then, Adios, baby, and thank you, and that two-day weekend, oh, yeah. Later.
Phil Hendry.